Let's start this exchange then with a discussion of water, you know, the stuff that's supposed to be falling from the sky this time of year. Sky water is the name of one kind of AWG, atmospheric water generator. It's a little science fiction-y, but an AWG can grab moisture from the air and end up with a tank full of water, which is just great for a planet concerned about sources of fresh water to drink for more than 7 billion people. Let's find out more about the process and the people. David Hertz is the co-founder of SkySource SkyWater Alliance, which won the Water Abundance X Prize, a competition meant to ease the world's fresh water shortages. David, thanks for joining us today in the exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Happy to be here.
So I understand some of your motivation comes from surfing and sailing. This is what you say on the web. How does that guide your thinking about water?
Well, certainly growing up, being aware of water and the water scarcity, I mean, less than 1% of the water on the planet is fresh water. 97% is salt water. The rest is frozen. So I've just been very, very aware of the importance of water as an architect for the last 35 years, working at the edge of sustainability towards a regenerative and restorative architecture. And, of course, growing up in Southern California, we're acutely aware of how little water we actually get here.
Yeah, let me add that title in so folks can understand. You are the founder and president of SEA, the Studio of Environmental Architecture. So as you mentioned, very concerned with architectural design that is friendly to the planet. And that probably teaches you a few more things about the operations of the planet itself and things like the lack of water you were just talking about. You and Laura Hertz, your wife, not the inventors of SkyWater. That involves Richard Grodin. Tell us about how you guys met.
Well, we met through a mutual friend, a client, a neighbor who was aware of the technology. And, you know, for years I've been working on trying to make buildings actually give back more than they take. And we can do that with energy, you know, of course, with solar, and we can do that in some other beneficial ways. But we haven't been able to do it with water. We could use efficiency and fixtures, which we do, and that's great. And we can try to collect water, especially here in Southern California. But we get a lot of water in a short period of time, and it's increasingly unpredictable. So the idea that we can take water that's from the atmosphere is quite amazing. When I started to look at the atmosphere and realized that there's over 37.5 million billion gallons of water, it's 16 zeros, this invisible vapor is enough water to cover the entire Earth if it were to condense with an inch of rain, and it's more than all the rivers combined on the planet. That's coming kind of from a point of abundance rather than scarcity, and it's just more about how does mankind work efficiently with natural systems to harvest that.
So when you first got to see the machinery, I mean, was that a moment that is forever seared in your memory?
You know, it's still a moment, Jeff. When we turn on one of these SkyWater machines and we just see water coming out, it still seems like alchemy. And in fact, when I first heard about it, it seemed too good to be true. And I had to test it and put a small machine in my office. And then I ended up putting a 150-gallon-a-day machine in the back of my architecture firm right off Venice Beach, off the Venice Boardwalk, where there's quite a lot of homelessness, and I decided to use solar energy to drive the machine and put a bottle filling station in a street art mural right on the back of my building in the alley, and give water away for free to the homeless. And now we water about 80 urban farm boxes also that were not being adopted due to the drought, by employing kids age out of the foster care program through a local nonprofit. So it's a kind of a full circle of starting with light and turning that into electricity and then making water out of air, and then a kind of social experiment where we are all about the democratization of our common good, water as a fundamental human right, not the commodification of it as a product perhaps sold to us in plastic bottles.
You mentioned having a bit of skepticism at the outset, thinking of this as alchemy, you know, the old pseudoscience of trying to do things like turn lead into gold. So, I mean, did it take a while to convince you? It sounds like you had to see it work in the back of your office to know that it was going to really do its thing.
That's exactly right. It's kind of an empirical testing of making sure that this was really going to work and under what conditions. But one of the things that I began to realize more and more was that some of the limitations on atmospheric water generators is that they generally have a strong appetite for electricity, and they require a reasonable amount of heat and humidity, and so their use is often limited where water stress is critical. And that was really part of the challenge of how we advanced the technology through the XPRIZE.
David Hertz is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about SkyWater, which is an atmospheric water generator with some wrinkles, and won the Water Abundance XPRIZE. That was the reference he just made. You can join us as we talk to David, the co-founder of SkySource SkyWater Alliance. 800-838-3760 with your questions about how it works. I have many. You may too. You can also join us by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So is SkyWater a little different from some of the other atmospheric water generators?
Well, we've analyzed many of the atmospheric water generators, and of course, going back to even the Peruvians and Incans, there were techniques to try to harvest water from the sky. Things like fog catchers, for instance, that are passive, that have kind of nets that form condensation, like your screen door might get when you see the beads of water, but contemporary ones generally use this vapor compression cycle, which is just a fancy word for kind of like your air conditioner. It's taking a warm surface and hitting it against a cold surface. And unfortunately, really, most of the water generators, you know, require a compressor and a refrigerant to get that cold surface. Some machines use a desiccant, like those little packets that you find in
The ones that say don't eat, yeah.
Yeah, they do not want to eat. But what they are good at doing is absorbing moisture. But then the problem is that you generally don't have a potable water source, and then you have to do a lot of filtration. And the name of the game, really, in concern about atmospheric water is the energy water nexus, how much energy has to go into making that water. And what makes SkyWater unique is that it has some patented processes that don't use the desiccant and use less energy than other machines.
But some of the same limitations you're talking about, where the areas that might need water the most because they're low on moisture also don't have a lot of atmospheric moisture?
That's absolutely right. And according to the United Nations, water demands are set to exceed supplies by over 40% by 2030. I mean, it's 2 to 3 billion people around the world are going to lack immediate access to clean drinking water. And so one of the solutions that we were very interested in as architects is how do we address that demand where, one, there may not even be electricity, and two, the climate might not be conducive for atmospheric water generation.
So what goes on in there? I mean, we talked about a warm surface and a cold surface, but you're talking about how the SkyWater process uses less energy than some of the others. But how? What else goes in there? What are the other components and ingredients?
Well, so what happens is the SkyWater machine actually works to mimic nature, and it actually creates a chambered environment where the air itself is condensing. So it's making clouds essentially in a box in a simple way by taking a warm surface and hitting a cold surface, but it's the actual air that condenses. You know, this is much like what you would find with condensation in the case of having a glass full of ice water in a warm room. You get all of that water that's being basically sucked out of the air that's forming. But if you can do that in a process like nature, where you're actually making a cloud that gets very heavy and it becomes what we call an aerosol, then that will drop out of the air. And that's a very efficient process for capturing a lot of water.
So then, over the course, you mentioned the small one in your office. You mentioned the 150-gallon one outside as well. That where you're giving water away to the public, but the one in your office, how much does that put out, and over what period of time?
About 15 gallons over a day, mm-hmm. Which is certainly more water than we could really use for our office of about 15 people. So. So there's smaller scales and there's larger scales. And the challenge of the Water Abundance X Prize was to make 2,000 liters a day over a 24-hour period using 100% renewable energy at a cost of less than 2 cents per liter. That was an incredibly high bar. It was a two-year competition. There were 98 teams from 27 countries competing. And we were the only ones that were actually able to do it. That's how challenging it is to make that high a volume, especially with the renewable energy side.
So what was the key then? I mean, you mentioned having solar power the stuff where you are, but is that what you used for the XPRIZE version?
We could not use solar. When we looked at solar as an option, the area that was required for solar and the cost to make that 2 cents just wouldn't work. So we had looked at technologies that have what we would call higher energy density, that is how much more energy you could have in a smaller area at a lower cost, and started to work with this process called biomass gasification. And ultimately we partnered with All Power Labs in Berkeley that have been building these amazing kind of personal power products that use biomass, basically wood chips or agricultural waste like walnut shells or pistachio nuts, and could be fuel flexible as it moves into different climates and regions like coconut husk or rice husk. And it basically uses a process called pyrolysis, which is a partial combustion process to essentially vaporize that organic matter and break apart its molecules and then capture the gases off of it that could be methane, hydrogen, and other flammables, and put that through a gen set. So it's basically like a generator that, say, would be running off of natural gas, but the gas is the producer gas. And what's amazing about this, Jeff, is that it actually is a carbon negative technology. It sequesters CO2 as it comes off of the biomass. And the byproduct is biochar. And biochar, if you don't know, it's an amazing substance. It's a high temperature biochar that is used as a soil enhancer. It is hydrophilic. It absorbs water and retains water in the soil.
We've done some segments on biochar, and in fact have been made aware of the fact that it was used by people thousands of years ago, and we're sort of rediscovering it now. So I was going to ask if you ended up with charcoal, and the answer is kind of yes.
Oh, definitely yes. And it's interesting that you know about it. It's great that you did a segment. It's quite fascinating. And in fact, when you look at the pre-Aztec cultures that had amazing agricultural, sustained agriculture over thousands of years, you find they were very aware of the importance of charcoal. And it helps soil biological activity, water retention, pest management, and mineral uptake. And one of the things that they've been finding recently is that it actually, because of the high carbon loading, tricks the plant and root zone into thinking they had gone through a fire, and increases plant growth. So it's a win-win across energy, agriculture, and climate management. But we also get heat as a byproduct. And with heat, that and moisture, by essentially taking biomass that's wet, we can create essentially a tropical rainforest in a box while simultaneously drying the feedstock that's needed for the gasification, and then capturing the water vapor back out of it. And so the novel invention that I looked at with this with SkySource was to take a SkyWater machine and an All Power Lab gasifier, biomass gasifier, put them together in a shipping container, which we call the WEDEW, D-E-W. It stands for Wood to Energy Deployed Emergency Water. And all of a sudden, you have this kind of magic box where that is climate agnostic, meaning that it doesn't matter what if you're in a cold climate or a dry climate. You have an energy solution, a water solution. You have biochar as a byproduct. It's carbon negative. And in fact, you could even have refrigeration as a byproduct, because just like your refrigerator at home, where you're trying to make cold, the back of your refrigerator is the extraction of heat. Well, we're making heat, so we end up having a cold. And so this can be incredible for climate resilience and a state of readiness to address a more uncertain and severe future, for self-reliance if you're outside of the grid, or you just want to have kind of your own emergency system of water and backup, and of course relief for disaster relief. This could be immensely helpful. Imagine a hurricane, mm-hmm. and all the green waste that you have, and the need for refrigeration, water, and energy.
So David Hertz, how big? What's the scale on the WeDo? Is it come in one size, and have you tried it on different levels of sizing?
So it's a 20-foot standard intermodal shipping container, and that has the capacity to generate 2,000 liters a day at 25 kilowatts of electricity, with about 10 tons of equivalent air conditioning. They could be scaled in different ways and larger fashions or gang together. But that's a standard module that we're currently working with. Of course, we just finished winning the XPRIZE, but within 2 weeks, we did put it into a container, and we powered a conference called Verge in Oakland by setting up a microgrid in front of the conference center. But we're now in the development and productization phase.
All right, so a lot of work still ahead to get SkyWater out there to the world, but obviously a big enough start that impressed the folks at the XPRIZE. We're talking 98 teams from 27 countries competing, and the Water Abundance XPRIZE went to the people from SkySource SkyWater Alliance. David Hertz is the co-founder of that alliance. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange, and best of luck as we continue to explore this fascinating process.